The purpose of Wealth Talk is to educate, inform, and hopefully entertain you on the subject of building your wealth. Wealth Builders recommends you should always take independent financial, tax, or legal advice before making any decisions around your finances.
Welcome to episode 87 of Wealth Talk. My name is Christian Rodwell, the Membership Director for Wealth Builders, and I'm joined today by our founder, Mr. Kevin Whelan. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Chris, and welcome back to these rainy shores from your sunny escape in the Canary Islands.
Yes, cut short, but still an enjoyable week in the sun nonetheless. So good to be back in the hot seat again with you, Kevin. And last week, we were talking to Russ Hayworth, and we were talking about the aspects of going into business with your family. And, you know, we had some great feedback on that. And we're carrying on the theme this week and actually now looking at the role of financial literacy with the younger generation. So it's specifically teaching entrepreneurship and understanding of money in schools.
Yeah, it's a subject very close to my heart, Chris. And as you know, financial literacy, or it's, you know, has a multitude of sins, that one, doesn't it? It kind of means people understanding more about the subject, not just of finance, but of wealth, of understanding, you know, how you can position money and all the freedoms that go with that from a very early age. And that's a big and a daunting task. And no wonder it's not on the curriculum. However, the school curriculum has really been predicated on old traditions of, you know, studying hard on your own, getting a good job, and assuming that people will stay in that employment for a very long time. And we're passionate about people adding value and creating entrepreneurial skills and playing on teams as opposed to seeing themselves in jobs. And I think the two guests that we have today share those values, don't they?
They do, yes. Both of them come from a teaching background. And it's interesting, I was just listening to the radio this morning, Kevin, obviously, you know, kind of in the second wave, in and out of the second wave at the moment, and, you know, talking about online learning, which has just rapidly had to accelerate. It's been forced to, you know, really take hold this year, and just questioning how does that work, because people learn differently, and obviously the lack of connection, which is another fundamental aspect of what we talk about at Wealth Builders. You know, just sitting at home learning from a computer is a very different experience for kids, but one perhaps that they're going to have to start getting used to.
Yeah, I think the online learning has been a feature of what's been happening in COVID, and certainly with the use of technology. And of course, it's more relevant now for parents to be aware of what their kids are doing online, and to be part of that educational choice rather than sort of, you know, see that they're on something and trust that they're doing the right thing. And I think increasingly older generation are becoming disenfranchised from the technology, and therein is a challenge. You know, money's often a taboo subject across the divide of different generations, isn't it, Chris? I think both of the guests today kind of referenced that point, and I can say certainly from my own viewpoint, money was never really talked about. It was never really discussed. It was certainly never inclusive. And I think probably what we're trying to do by introducing the subject and getting it debated is to try and suggest that keeping it in the family, having discussions with kids, not at a high level, you know, not to try and bore them, but to try and engage them in small parts of their overall wealth of the family. And we'll talk about that over probably, Chris, a series of episodes, I think. It seems like it's got traction, the whole idea. I mean, I remember from some of the groups that I had just a few years ago, Chris, you know, those people who were well on the way to establishing their financial independence and moving forward through to abundance, the most popular subject that they wanted covered was how to engage the teenage generation in the subject of being involved in the overall wealth. And that's definitely something we'll be pushing that agenda over the coming weeks and also in the long term as far as Wealth Builders is concerned.
So kicking off our series of conversations now with Dan Britton, and Dan has written a series of books called Financial Fairy Tales. So we'll hear from Dan first, and then we'll hear from one of our new members who has recently joined the Semsets Wealth Program. That's Neil Moggan. And Neil will share some of the ideas that he's had around this subject. So let's head on over to those conversations right now. Dan, welcome to Wealth Talk today.
Hi, lovely to be here.
Good to have you on, Dan. Longtime friend of Wealth Builders. So you understand our seven pillar concept, and it's going to be very enjoyable speaking to you today and finding out exactly what are the financial fairy tales, Dan. So why don't we begin there?
Cool. Yeah. Well, lovely to be here, Chris. So the financial fairy tales was an idea I had to teach younger children important money ideas and concepts. Typically around the kind of 5 to 8 years old. I sort of came to a financial awareness quite late in life, and read a lot of information, went on a lot of courses and so on. And information I was picking up was that our money habits and beliefs are often formed in early childhood prior to the age of seven. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if we planted some positive seeds in children about money and about positive beliefs and so on at that age, and then when they grew up, they wouldn't have to kind of unpick all the damage that they'd accumulated, which was my situation. So that was the incentive behind it.
Okay, and then what were the next steps that you took?
Well, the kind of story, I was working a lot in primary schools. I was doing some consultancy work, training teachers, a lot around IT systems and so on, completely unrelated. But they knew that I was interested in money and I had a banking background. And one day, at one school I was working in, and it was a lovely, bright primary school. I don't know if you spent much time in primary schools, but usually the wall displays are all lively colours and the kids are all super excited and staff are enthusiastic. And you know, it's a lovely, vibrant place to be. And they said, oh, you'll enjoy it. You know, tomorrow we've got a money talk. A guy's going to come in and talk to the kids about money. And I thought, I'll be part of that. That sounds like fun. So picture the scene. You've got, you know, maybe 100, 150 youngsters, real tiny little kids, all sat cross-legged on a sports hall floor, you know, or a gym floor. And the guy comes in from a well-known bank, shall we say, and goodness me, he was just grey from top to toe. You know what I mean? He was just the picture of greyness. He reminded me of Mr. Bean, only not funny. You know? And his talk was just dire. He just lectured these kids for about 2 hours about dividends and bonds and saving for your own funeral was one topic. And these poor little shiny kids were sat there, you know, practically with tears in their eyes after 2 hours, you know, and then they all got off pen and a furry little gonk to take as a souvenir. And that was the basis of their money talk. And it just planted a seed in me and firstly, how awful it was. But secondly, surely there's a better way to teach particularly younger kids about money. So on my drive home, I had a sort of an hour or so stuck on the M6 going north. And I thought, you know, I wonder if there's a way to kind of get involved with a bit of creativity, get some right brain thinking, imagination going for these kids. And the sort of seed of a story, kind of like a modern day Jack and the Beanstalk type thing was planted. So I went home and I just kind of scribbled something down and thought not much more of it. Went back to that school the next day and they were sort of joking in the staff room saying, you know, gosh, what did you think of that money day? And I was trying to be a little bit diplomatic because they, you know, they may have enjoyed it. I don't know what they were used to, but I kind of broke down. I thought, well, that was pretty dire. And they said, well, you know, how would you go about it? What would you do differently? And I said, well, funny you should mention that. Here's one I prepared earlier. So I kind of told them about this story and they thought it was great. So I did an impromptu assembly with these kids, you know, and I think, oh, they must have been a bit doubtful thinking, oh, gosh, another money talk. But I read the story and then it seemed to go down a lot better. So that was the genesis of it. And then from that, I looked into publishing as a book. I spoke to numerous publishers and agents and went down that route. But in the end, I sort of self-published just because I wanted to get them out there and see what would happen. So so to date, there are five story books and also some learning activities for schools and a teacher pack as well that it was helpful to bridge the gap between where the books were and actually giving something that the teachers could tangibly use in the classroom as well.
How easy has it been to obviously, you know, have those conversations with the schools and how have they, you know, embraced the financial fairy tales? Because I know you are working with schools on this, aren't you?
Yeah, but the funny thing with the financial education curriculum, I think it was 2014, around about that time. So there was a big push to get financial education on the curriculum, in particularly in secondary schools, but also spilling over into primary. And Martin Lewis, you know, the money-saving guy on TV and so on, he was spearheading a campaign, and there was online petitions that you could sign, and it eventually evolved into a parliamentary group that would investigate this. And I was fortunate enough to be invited to contribute to that, to give evidence to it. And, you know, eventually we came up with a policy and you know, financial education was going to be mandatory in schools from 2014. So there were high fives all around. Everybody thought the deal was done and it was great. But sadly, since then, not a great deal has really happened in many cases. You know, in some cases, some schools do a good job. And I think that's down to the motivation of the teachers, individual teachers, or the head teacher seeing that as a priority. But unfortunately, in many other cases, financial education is just given lip service to or completely ignored because it's supposed to be mandatory, but it's not actually enforced on the curriculum. So it might be hidden in a little bit of the maths curriculum somewhere, you know, working out percentages, or they might do 1 hour on it within the PSHE, you know, in between sex, drugs and rock and roll. So it's been disappointing in the way that it was taking up, to be honest, in terms of the whole financial education. But within that, there are obviously pockets of really good practice. Some schools and some local authorities have been really keen. As I say, particularly Scotland was doing really well with it. And where I can, I've tried to, you know, to influence that, you know, with my own work.
And how can the parents approach the money topics with their children, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, it's important because if you think if it's not being done in schools, particularly not universally in schools, then who is going to teach kids about money? And I think parents do have a big role to play. And it depends really what age group we're talking about. So if you think about younger ones, so sort of primary age kids from I don't know, 5 to 8 or say, then they start to become interested in money and you can get involved with basics like, you know, counting out change in a shop or giving them increasing responsibility for buying and things. And then all teenagers are interested in mobile phones and cars and things like that. So you can hook it on to something that they're interested in, you know, rather than lecturing a 13-year-old about, you know, ways to buy a house, which they might not be relevant to them for, you know, years and years. If you can find something that they're interested in and relevant to them, then begin to build up their interest and feed that enthusiasm. I think that's a good way to go.
Mm. And focusing back on the financial fairy tales, Dan, so tell us, how many books have you written and published, and what are some of the core lessons within those?
Yeah, so there's 5 story books at the moment and the activity book. And the way I approached some of them was to think about, well, what theme do I want to teach here? What message do I want to get across? So one of them, for example, it's called The Last Gold Coin. And that was about compound interest, believe it or not. You know, there can't be many storybooks written around compound interest. And the idea is that you've got a wicked witch who steals all the money from the castle, and they leave behind one gold coin that sort of falls out in the robbery. But because the prince is good and kind and looks after people and so on, that gold coin magically doubles. So, you know, one becomes two, becomes four, becomes eight, and so on. And eventually it grows so big that it bursts out of the castle vault where it's held. And the idea is that then kids can kind of understand the fact that money can grow over time. And, you know, if you save it or invest it and do good things with it, then money can grow. So that was a sort of concept there. Another one was the troll bridge. And I had an idea there. I was on holiday actually in France, and there was this little kind of, it must have been a sort of a medieval type bridge, but it didn't really go anywhere. It must have been washed away, or the roads were redirected, and it just sort of sat on its own in this bridge, and it fascinated me. And it planted the seed for a story of, this was about taxation. Again, not an obvious topic for a children's book, but this is a story where you've got a valley with one road in and out, and it goes over a bridge. And there's a troll who lives under the bridge, and the troll jumps out and stops everyone who's going backwards and forwards and takes a tax from them. And, you know, and it's just accepted that's how it is. So you have to pay the troll tax. And then one day a little boy kind of starts questioning and saying, well, why should we pay the troll? What does he do for us? What does he do with the money? And again, that the idea is to stimulate conversations about, well, why do we pay taxes? What, you know, what's the purpose of that? What do governments do with our money? And different systems of that as well. So those are some of the themes. But I try to teach positive, empowering messages as well as the practicalities. So as well as, you know, two and two make four, it's tied up with perhaps self-reliance, entrepreneurship, a positive feeling about money. Going back to that idea that our habits and beliefs are often formed in those early years. So if people are growing up with thinking, well, not I can't afford it, it might be, you know, how can I afford it? What can I do to generate the money? Then I think they're going to be in a better place when they reach adulthood than they would be with disempowering beliefs.
So Dan, I know your books are popular not just in the UK, but also the USA, and have won some awards as well.
Oh yeah, it was very kind of you to mention. Yeah, they're in about 15 or 16 different countries, and it's absolutely wonderful. If I get a message from somebody, I've had messages from Fiji, Vietnam, obviously the States. The first ever book that I sold overseas was a judge at The Hague, of all places, you know, like a high court judge, who wrote me a really nice note, which is amazing. And yeah, fortunate to be picked up for a few awards in the States, and I was invited to go out to San Diego.
Congratulations. And you're now also looking at teenagers. So tell me more about your Money Map project, Dan.
Oh yeah, I'm super excited about this. So we know that financial education is important for kids. You know, that's a given. You know, 99 people out of 100 would say that. But what currently do kids know about money? You know, if everyone was to take a test today, what would the percentage score be? You know, is it going to be 10%? Is it going to be 90%? You know, or somewhere in between? We just don't know. So what I wanted to do was a big money quiz across the UK. So on a particular date, kids all over the country would be able to log in either on a computer or on their phone, and they could take a money quiz, just a short fun quiz, and hopefully we could gamify it so that they could, you know, get badges and share them and so on. And then from that data, we could then take a map of the whole of the UK and look at what the scores are. You know, what were the areas of strength and weakness, and then break that down further, perhaps by gender, by age, by location, tied to perhaps postcode or areas of deprivation, and maybe English as a second language. Because if the results came back saying that kids who spoke English as a second language were 20% or 50% lower than, you know, English-speaking native kids, that would indicate that there might be a need then for multilingual resources around financial education, or is there a real strong correlation between areas of deprivation in parts of the country and a low financial education, in which case that sort of society, that cycle of poverty is going to perpetuate because the kids aren't learning what they need to know to break out of that financial situation. So that was the kind of big vision. And then once the kids are using the money map, we could then provide some financial education, again, that they would enjoy, that would be gamified in some way. They'd be learning key money skills. And then we could test again, do another quiz at the end of the program, and therefore prove the before and after effect. And so you could actually prove that the average score has gone from X to Y, and these people have increased by this amount. We've raised the bar, moved the needle, if you will, of financial knowledge and skills amongst young people in the UK, by a proven amount. Because I think that's what's been lacking. Not only is it a universal approach, but also proof of its effectiveness. Because like the guy I said, Mr. Bean, who turns up to do his money talk, that might happen in schools all over the country. But what's the legacy of that? How do we know what they've learned? How do we know what they've benefited from? How are we going to know that it's not going to go straight out of their minds as soon as they leave that classroom? So, I was really keen on making something that's going to prove the effectiveness.
Mm. And how? Where do you see the role of kind of the entrepreneurs in this movement, Dan? Because it seems like, what we're talking about here is really a shift within, young adults and children here from that typical employee mindset of, work hard, get good grades, and work your way up the ladder, now to, an entrepreneurial mindset, because jobs that are popular today just didn't exist 5 years ago in many cases, and the speed of technology as well is advancing, and children now obviously are, as you mentioned earlier, kind of obsessed with mobile phones at younger and younger ages. So how is, as I said, the role of the entrepreneur placed within this movement, do you think?
Well, most definitely. I think, I use my dad as an example quite often. I mean, he left school at 15, went to work for a big company, stayed there all his life, took early retirement, got a pension, happily ever after. And that was his model of the world. But that's like ancient history now. Young people today, as you say, jobs that are existing now probably weren't existing 5 years ago, and jobs that the kids will be in school now will be doing in 5 years, we probably don't even know about. They might be AI technicians or, kind of moon landing specialists. Who knows what they're going to be doing? So we don't know that. So I think as part of the financial education, having entrepreneurial mindset, just be able to perhaps combine having a job, but also looking at other opportunities, whether it's, to create wealth through business or through investments, or just being open to other possibilities, or being able to shift probably throughout their careers. They'll go through states of employment, self-employment, portfolio type working. So, I think it's our duty as educators to prepare young people for the workplace that they will find themselves in. But to have that kind of growth mindset and that flexibility to be able to adapt and thrive, and it's not just in competition, in inverted commas, with people in the UK, because we're going to be competing on a global scale. The internet has leveled the playing field, so kids in Mumbai or in the Philippines or wherever who are really swatting up on their education and developing really marketable skills, there's a danger that our kids are going to be left behind if we just stick to a very traditional education system that's going to push people into jobs that probably won't exist anymore.
Mm. Dan, if someone wants to check out the Financial Fairy Tales, where's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, it'd be great. So it's thefinancialfairytales.com. It's the website there. That would be fantastic. And if anybody's interested in the Money Map project, that's in early development, but I'd love to hear from some potential partners or people who are interested. And you can find out more about that on fearlessfinance.org.
Excellent. Dan, thanks so much for sharing with us today. Doing great things. And I know there's obviously many more ideas and stories in the pipeline. So we look forward to seeing those in the future.
Thank you, Chris. Lovely to talk to you.
Neil, very warm welcome to Wealth Talk today.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. Nice to see you, Christian.
So, Neil, you have just very recently joined our Seven Steps to Wealth program. And Kevin and myself were really, really keen to get you on board because you reached out to us, actually. I think perhaps after listening to some podcast episodes, and we really want to hear your story, Neil, as to, you know, why you reached out and now how we've come to collaborate and begin working together.
Okay. So my journey started back at the start of lockdown, really. Had a lot more time on my hands. I'm a teacher, and obviously I'm still going into school to help on a couple of days a week. But the main thing was thinking about kind of my family's financial future. The last recession hit kind of 2008, and teaching salaries never really recovered from that. So I was looking like things are all right at the moment, but I wanted to kind of protect the family and over the next kind of 10, 15 years, really, and give ourselves more financial freedom. So I did what everyone does and reads Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And then I was doing some searching on the internet and came across Kevin's book, Seven Pillars of Wealth. And that really struck home, actually. That was a really, really great kind of guide and kind of started to give me a bit of a plan of what I could do potentially. And then I created my business from there and started looking at our family's financial situation.
Great. And it's only been a couple of weeks, but how are you finding the program so far?
I'm absolutely loving it. I'm really enjoying it, finding a lot of value from it. Like in the last couple of weeks, done the Wealth Dynamics test and found that really useful. And my wife's done it, and that's really interesting as well. You can start to see a pathway to achieving financial independence. At the start, it seemed a bit pretty far off. And then when Kevin was talking, and yourself were talking about 5 to 7 years, you think, really? And I've given myself a challenge of 11 years to do it. But like the more I've got into the course, the more you can see that being a realistic goal.
Yeah. Now, of course, as well as obviously learning those steps yourself, Neil, you're hugely passionate about sharing this wisdom and knowledge with the younger generation. And as you mentioned, you're a teacher, so you're on the ground every day surrounded by teenagers, and no better place to see, you know, where the gaps are currently in the education system and what opportunities you feel there are to help bring entrepreneurship and more financial literacy to the young generation. So tell us about some of those ideas you've had.
Absolutely. So I'm a director of sport, health and PSHE. PSHE stands for Personal, Social, Health, Economic Education at secondary school in Norfolk. And for me, my passion in life is about inspiring people and helping people achieve their life goals. And for me, like, schools do a lot of amazing work, but one thing that's clearly a weakness in the system is kind of financial aptitude and coaching. And a lot of what I see is all around earned income, very little about kind of generating cash from assets. And that's something that I want to change. So I've created an online teaching course for teachers to educate their young people around kind of asset generation.
Mm. And you sent us a copy of this, Neil. We had a look at it and, you know, we jumped on the call and we discussed it and we said, look, we really like what you're doing here. And we feel that, you know, there's two angles, really. Obviously, one, you can go to the teachers and obviously try and filter down to the students that way. But another way perhaps is looking at the parents of these pupils, and those parents especially that are already kind of switched on to the idea of this. And of course, the Wealth Builders community is the perfect community there. So so we're now co-creating and going to develop that course together, and that will be ready obviously early next year. So very much excited and look forward to that, Neil.
Yeah. We've got a lot of ideas lined up.
Well, exactly. Every day, I think there's a new idea and more of that to be revealed in due course. So I'm interested, Neil, because we talk about entrepreneurship of as adults, right? But I can imagine the younger generation now who are on their mobile phones, who are absolutely plugged into all of the different social media profiles and accounts that are out there. They're seeing role models who are actually entrepreneurs, but perhaps the term entrepreneurship is not one that's familiar with the teenagers.
Yeah, that would be very fair. I think, like I say, schools do a lot of amazing work, and this isn't to bash teachers at all, because I think there's been some amazing work done, particularly this year in really difficult circumstances. But very little of that is taught in schools, and kids are seeing that outside. And it's often kind of the younger generation that have kind of switched on to kind of what can be achieved through social networks and developing your following and things like that, and how to monetize that. And obviously very little of that is taught in schools at the moment. And kind of my drive is to really kind of change that and influence that.
So how do you think, what do you think is important, Neil, to, I guess, get the children excited about learning these skills, because they can obviously see a desired result that they want, be that, you know, to have some kind of fame or obviously, you know, to allow them to accelerate and get the things they want in life. For some, perhaps to, you know, be able to talk about something they're passionate about or a cause. Whereas traditional, you know, lessons perhaps are, you know, not so fundamentally exciting for them. So there's no desired end result. So how can you see, you know, this being brought to their attention where they see the importance of learning these things?
Well, I think role models are very important in terms of encouraging them and inspiring them. But I also think at school level, kind of 15, 16 year olds, it's about kind of opening their eyes to what can be achieved and about how to lay the foundations. So I don't think school's role is to necessarily teach them all of these skills, but it's certainly to open up their eyes to what can be achieved and developing multiple streams of income and different ways that you can go about doing that, just to kind of protect them. Because I see in the next 10 years there's gonna be a lot of opportunities for kids, but there's also going to be a lot of kind of downsides as well, potentially with the economy. So there's going to be a real case of winners and losers. And I'm kind of worried about kind of a generation of kids getting left behind, really. So that's what's driving me to kind of really help young people and kind of get them inspired, get them doing and taking part in small tasks to start off with, and giving them a base from which to start from.
And where do you see the role of the parent? How can parents help with this, Neil?
I think the role of the parent is crucial, really. I think in this country, we have a culture of not really talking about money, particularly kind of within families and stuff. And that can be a real hindrance to kids without those kind of parents. Like my family, we didn't really talk about money at all. It's only since I've started this business that I'm having all these conversations with my mum and dad. And I was like, why don't you teach me that? So a lot of people that go into business have parents that were in business already. And it's kind of, if you know it, you know it. And if you don't know it, you kind of think, right, the right path is go to university, get a job, earn throughout my life, and then get a pension. And I think that narrative is gone now.
Yeah. And I think it's important that we acknowledge what does already exist within the educational system. And the Prince's Trust is one organisation that is teaching entrepreneurship currently.
Yeah. Absolutely. They've got a Young Enterprise Challenge, and that's really good. They've got kind of a computer game version that kind of teaches it. It's about 6 hours long, and it talks about kind of how to create a shop and kind of stock levels and things like that, and how to advertise. I wouldn't say it's limited. I think it's a good starting point, but I think there's so much more that schools could do.
Yeah. Neil, well, we're very excited about working with you and seeing what's come early in 2021. And thank you for sharing everything with us today on Wealth Talk.
Thanks ever so much for your time. Nice to meet everyone. And I look forward to speaking to you again in the future. Cheers.
So we heard from Dan first up there, Kevin. And obviously Dan being a teacher, he told us that story of the the rather grey banker coming in and almost lecturing the kids for 2 hours. And I can kind of picture that scene right now. I remember sitting cross-legged in the assemblies, and I don't think that would have been one of my favourite ones either. But, you know, he identified a problem, like all good entrepreneurs do, and took action to do something about that. And that led, of course, to writing the Financial Fairy Tale series.
Yeah, you can tell that Dan got a bit of fire in his belly, didn't he? When I listened to the story, Chris, I found myself sort of kind of smirking, almost embarrassed in a way that the banking industry still thinks that you give kids a little gift and somehow you'll bind a relationship with them for life. And it's just an interesting way to try and do that without any real thought about whether the kids are going to enjoy it or not. And it felt a bit like a grey and dreary spitting image puppet in my mind, you know, just completely, you know, you can almost imagine the whole thing was shrouded in grey and the kids were squirming and the teachers were squirming and the whole thing was just a nightmare. And I think he wanted to change that, and I applaud him for it, because anybody who, you know, just sees something and they can just react and they could be negative about it, but he's chosen to be positive, and that positivity is born out of good thoughts, you know. So if you think about it, in reality, kids, creativity and money go well together. And I think part of the curriculum isn't recognizing that creativity needs to come from value. You know, adding value and being an entrepreneur just doesn't seem to be on that. So I just love anything that talks about money in school, anything that brings a little bit of knowledge, because, you know, the kids are going to be grown-ups before you know it, and they're going to have to make decisions on their own. They'll realize very quickly that there are so many decisions to make around finance, which hits them like a boxing glove, you know, all of a sudden, bang, student loan, bang, overdraft, bang, you know, so many things that will catch them out unless somebody starts to talk to them about that. So it's good that he's bringing in the concept of money at an early age. And I think I applaud him for that. And, you know, I've read one or two of those. He mentioned one or two. And I think they definitely aimed at the right level for youngsters. And I think I would encourage anybody who's got young kids just to have a look and see if they would resonate with you.
Yeah. I love the way he's wrapped up some of those core lessons in the books, you know, about compound interest and the troll tax. Actually reminds me of one of your quotes, Kevin, you know, you can't save your way to wealth. And in one of the early workshops that we did a few years back together, we played a little game, if you remember, you know, and it's two groups, and, you know, one group trying to save your way and see how much you can make, and the other to think entrepreneurially and see the difference there. And it's these fun little things that certainly can be introduced at an early age, and those things will stick in the memory of children, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's going to be interesting because our second guest, we know we're talking also about creating a game, aren't we, you know, so that it can engage kids as well to enjoy the process and to absorb the lessons. And I think that's very laudable as well from Neil, who again shares a very similar passion, doesn't he? He comes from a very clear decision that he wants to bring financial literacy right into the heart of the curriculum and wants to be part of that process.
Yeah. And I asked Neil, obviously, about the importance of role models, because many children now, obviously, spending so much time online and on their phones, and they're seeing these, you know, similar age you know, people that are making lots of money and having success. And obviously, that's not necessarily, you know, always good role models. But it's interesting because that in itself is obviously a new kind of entrepreneurship, very different to, you know, the entrepreneurship of 5, 10, 20 years ago. And so there's a big shift. And obviously, Neil being in the classroom every day with a great relationship with the children is just in such a good place to, I guess, spot the best way of actually transferring this information to them.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, we've seen I suppose recently, haven't we? We've seen the high-profile case of Mr. Rashford from the footballer Manchester United, you know, doing something very seriously about being a role model for school meals and so on. And I applaud him for that. And, you know, some of those high-profile people, you know, could certainly do more to try and help that. And I think what Neil's trying to do is almost bring a combination of sports and health and wealth, really. And I think that's a good combination that would work because he's passionate about both. So I applaud both Daniel and Neil for their contribution. And I think from my side, certainly I would say from a macro perspective, you know, the next generation is going to be poorer than our generation. It's going to be the first generation poorer than one before it, I guess. And I talk about that in the book, Chris, that I wrote some while ago. So that's part of the reason why literacy, education, and being a good parent as a role model, because the kids will take their lead from you. So we just love to see our parents, certainly wealth builder parents, getting their children involved, whether it's something as simple as helping create the logo for the family wealth business, which we've seen some brilliant examples of that, haven't we, Chris? And getting kids involved when on the wealth chart, as the wealth thermometer grows, as people's recurring income starts to rise by 100, by 200, by 300. And we've got pictures of some of the families with their kids kind of taking a red pen and coloring the thermometer as mums and dads are earning more money, which gives more security for the family. And of course, there are so many things that you can do to engage children of all ages in spotting things, being aware of things, almost watching if they're watching TV, you know, to bring things to the attention of the family as well. And you can also talk to them about spotting adverts around debt, adverts around gambling, and all those sorts of things, and have proper conversations. And we tend to do that. We've done that a long time in our family. We have meal times when we talk about these things, and a no phone zone, as we call it. So you can't bring your phone to the meal table. Obviously, my kids are grown and gone now, but we still have a no phone zone now, and we still talk about these things. It's interesting, Chris, when you talk about role models and also language being absorbed. I can recount, it makes me laugh now, that you'll know, those people who followed the podcast for a while, Chris, will know that the catalyst for me was the early death of my dad at 46. And he left a kind of trail of devastation financially behind him. And he didn't really want to do that. He didn't get around to doing the right things. So not a great role model in that regard. But it's funny, I was talking to my mother, and I provide her with some income as part of her retirement. And she's 80 years of age now. And I was talking to her recently about sending her some money. And in a Geordie language, which is difficult to translate, but she said to me, "Can I put it in me sass, Kevin?" So she was even using the language of the small self-administered scheme. She had no clue what it meant, but she'd heard it from me, and she'd heard it from my brother, and she'd heard it sort of being spoken about in the family, and was jokingly kind of being part of it. And, you know, kids will absorb the language as well as grandparents. So it's just interesting to be using language and explaining that language as well, to be inclusive rather than exclusive, and feel like, you know, it's a taboo subject, which it should certainly not be.
Yeah. Kev, has your mum left a review?
My mum couldn't go online if you let her. There's no possibility of that at all, but
thankfully, we have had a couple of new reviews, Kevin. So before we wrap up today, let me squeeze these in, because I really do appreciate, of course, everyone leaving the reviews. And we're really actually getting quite close to having 100 reviews on Trustpilot, Kevin. So if we could push hard and ask all our listeners for a little Christmas present, that would be amazing if we could hit that target by Christmas. But let me read out. Mr. Scott said, "Great content, knowledge sharing. There's a lot of great content and sharing of invaluable knowledge on the podcast, as well as tips and valuable information. When I heard about it initially, I was unsure as to whether this would be something I'd enjoy, but I was pleasantly surprised and have really enjoyed listening to Wealth Builders Podcast. Highly recommend this to anyone." So thank you, Mr. Scott. And Jeff. So Jeff is one of our founder members, and Jeff has said, for 10 years, my wife and I had been progressing slowly with building our wealth and looking at how we could become financially independent and be able to look forward to a financially secure retirement. Finding Wealth Builders a couple of years ago has dramatically transformed our thinking, made us focus, made us plan, made us target results, and given us the push we needed. The results have been or will be life-changing for us. Wealth Builders are essentially educators and mentors, and they do this exceptionally well within all aspects of wealth. And actually goes on to say thanks to Paul Brooks, who's, you know, been especially helpful in setting up their SaaS strategy, and to their coach, their wealth coach, Carol. So they've embraced everything that we teach, and both Jeff and Stephanie, I know, have made some great results, and only greater results to come, I'm sure.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, when you hear a great review like that, and you can see already that there's a community there, there's an ecosystem there. And, you know, you talked about Paul and talked about Carol, talked about you, talked about me, talked about the community. And this is essentially, you know, an important thing when you think about your children, because we're all part of a community which is really designed to help the kids, whether it's the teachers, and hats off to Neil and for Dan for trying to influence that, you as a parent, and trying to deliberately and conscientiously be inclusive of your kids. And I think for us as well, Chris, we want to bring more interesting ways for that knowledge share to be transferred to kids, including materials that we will create. And you heard us mention some co-created work with Neil, who approached us and said, I think you could really help us, and we agreed. And that's interesting too, so that if you've got an idea around helping children, around helping teenagers, around helping grown-ups to, you know, create, build, and protect their wealth, then we'd be delighted to hear from you, and we'd be delighted to potentially collaborate with you. So that's a JV, which is pillar number 7, which is collaborating in joint ventures with other people. And sometimes the best way to build your wealth is to collaborate with people who already got a flow, and then you can get into their flow and enhance that. So good for them, good for Neil, and hopefully you'll see more of our materials coming soon, and we'll talk about that in the next episode.
Indeed. Thanks, Dan, and thanks, Neil, for your contributions on this week's episode. Thank you all for listening, and thank you, Kevin. We'll catch up next week.
Until then, Chris, see ya.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget that we are constantly updating our resources inside the Wealth Builders membership site to help you create, build, and protect your wealth. Head over to wealthbuilders.co.uk/membership right now for free access. That's wealthbuilders.co.uk/membership.